Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. As all the public school ISDs in Texas are now closed because of COVID-19, and many large preschools and daycare centers have also closed amid the stay-at-home orders, finding someone to watch over the children of essential workers is a serious problem that exposes a bias and a weakness in our emergency preparedness. What's being done to help these essential workers and their children keep our system afloat while keeping them and their children safe? How are you dealing with this issue? Do you feel like you were just told to figure it out and then get to work? And how did that go? Call into our conversation. We want to hear these stories. How are you dealing with these issues? And how do you think our system should be dealing with them? Call in. The number is 833-877-8255. That's also 833-TPR-TALK. And you can email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at TPRSource. And we are on Facebook. You can listen to us on Facebook and also comment there, and we'll get those comments on the air questions as well. Joining us this hour, Diane Schilder is a senior fellow at the Urban Institute studying programs and policies that affect children and families. Diane Schilder, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
Bob Sanborn's with us. He's the president and CEO of Children at Risk. Bob Sanborn, good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us, Mark Milton, Chief Operating Officer at Workforce Solutions Alamo. They provide subsidized child care assistance to eligible families throughout the Alamo region. And Mark Milton, good to have you today.
Thank you so much.
Diane Schilder, when we have planning for emergency, you know, we have a lot of, they do tabletop planning of pandemics and all catastrophes. Do they think about child care in those circumstances?
That's a very good question. So the federal government actually has provided quite a bit of guidance to Head Start programs that provide child development services and to child care programs over the years. However, the emergency preparedness information that has been put together up until last month was designed primarily to focus on issues such as hurricanes or natural disasters. So the Department of Health and Human Services has been rapidly updating this information to incorporate the latest science and what we know about a pandemic.
When there was first became discussed that we need to close the schools. Schools are super spreaders. Someone shows up for school, they have a virus, and then suddenly the whole campus has that virus. And so we got to shut the schools in order to protect the population. And the argument was, well, we can't do that because nurses and many other first responders depend on these schools for their child care. And then they can't go do their jobs if we shut down the schools. And then we were kind of like stuck for a little while, like, well, what do we do? We should have had a plan, right?
Well, I just want to mention that many states actually issued guidance very early in the pandemic, not only around schools, but also around child care and early education programs. So the federal response was relatively rapid given the pace of federal agencies. Nonetheless, what I've seen is quite a bit of variability around the country. Some states immediately put out guidance for child care providers and pre-K programs, and others have really been leading in terms of providing guidance for emergency child care to ensure that the child care workforce is safe and protected, while also ensuring that doctors, nurses, and other healthcare providers have the essential care that their children need so that they can go to work.
And sort of where I'm trying to get at here is other nations have other plans for child care. They think about child care and they think about it as a communal issue. but in the United States, and correct me if I'm kind of off base here, has had an attitude that is the problem of the parent. Go figure it out on your own. We don't want to have to hear about it at the office or wherever you work. And now we're seeing how that cavalier attitude is probably not going to work going forward.
There historically has been a federal role in supporting subsidized care for the lowest income workforce across the country. However, you're absolutely right that we have a state role rather than a federal role in childcare. The federal role is very clear that for states that receive child care funding, they must abide by certain health and safety standards. However, in contrast to many other countries, there is a delegation to states, and it's up to the states and often communities to make decisions about whether or not public funds should be allocated, but also the degree to which this programs that are receiving public funding need to abide by very strict standards to ensure not only health and safety, but quality for the young children and families that they serve.
Education quality.
Education and also caregiver quality. So when we think about education for infants and toddlers, often people have this notion that means, reading letters of the alphabet, but actually what it means is making sure that you have enough adults to care for young children to ensure that they are properly fed, that they receive a lot of high-quality interactions with parents or the caregivers talking to them using very advanced vocabulary. Those first 3 years are critical. Is a critical period in development. And so you see a lot of variability across the states and even within states as far as that the regulation of those standards, but also the standards with regard to health and safety. So in some instances, you might have one caregiver taking care of 16 children, and in other states, you might have a ratio of one adult to 6 young children. Again, the amount of interaction that you have, the quality of oversight to ensure that children are healthy and safe varies substantially. And again, that's a state decision and often also a local decision.
But looking at it from the viewpoint of a parent who is trying, just in the best of times, trying to figure out how am I going to deal with childcare, and you see how expensive it is, how hard it is to find some place that will work with you in certain circumstances if you have odd hours. And now, you know, it was a bare bones system to begin with. And now that we're dealing with coronavirus, people are shutting down. It's really not very flexible. People are really in a lurch. And maybe, if coming out through this, I know it's too soon, but should we be thinking about childcare post-coronavirus so that we can continue to be flexible in these extreme circumstances?
That's a terrific question. And I want to acknowledge that the current early care and education workforce is doing an amazing job, and I want to really thank them as well as the parents of young children. I know from my own perspective when my children were young and I was seeking child care and the schools might have been closed because of a weather emergency, it was quite a challenge and a struggle. There have been a number of initiatives over the years, some led by some of the terrific leaders in your state, to create a national agenda and movement to raise the bar, not only in terms of quality, but in terms of thinking about the role that the public sector can play to have a much more robust system.
Right, and we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. Diane Schilder is the senior fellow at the Urban Institute, and we're going to take your calls and emails. The number is 833-877-8255, coronavirus and child care. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Have you had a hard time finding reliable child care because of the coronavirus pandemic? Have you started to rely on a family member? How are you balancing teleworking and parenting during this time and still keeping yourself, your household, and your children safe? You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255 or also 833-TPR-TALK. Email us at The Source at tpr.org. Bob Sanborn, President and CEO of Children at Risk. You're looking at how kids are sometimes put in a vulnerable situation in this time. What are you seeing?
Well, I think, you know, the issue of childcare, early education, has been a big issue in this state for a number of years. And we've always been talking about this issue of quality. You know, is childcare just babysitting, or is it actually a quality start to your education? And in Texas, we've increasingly begun to understand that it's part of economic development, that when you have quality early education, you're going to have a better workforce. I think what the coronavirus does, though, it sort of accentuates this in another way, which is, if we can't take care of our children when we're busy trying to work, it's another economic development issue. And so, yes, we've had a horrible time across the state and in San Antonio in terms of first responders and essential workers finding a place to keep their kids. But we keep forgetting that in many ways, our child care workers, our early education workers, are also essential workers, right? Because if they're not around, then as a physician, you're not going to be able to do your job. As a nurse, you're not going to be able to do your job when you're worried about your kids or when you have no place to put your kids. So this coronavirus crisis has become a crisis also in early education. And we're moving in the right direction. We have been moving in the right direction. And hopefully this will help us do that. But there's still a whole range of planning that hasn't been done and needs to be done.
And, well, first of all, what do you think ought to be happening with children who have to go, if there's a scramble, I've got to find a place to take care of my child because I'm a nurse, I'm a doctor, I'm a firefighter, I got to be on the job. And what should they be looking for?
Yeah. So first off, what we know from the child care providers, and Mark will be able to talk about this as well, but child care providers across the state are ready to serve, right? We have heard a lot of stuff. Let's do these pop-up centers to create places for childcare. The reality is that many of our childcare centers are ready to serve right now. They just need to be asked, can you stay open? Can you do these things? Because many of them have economic hardship right now because people aren't bringing their kids in. They want to do whatever they can to help meet this need in terms of helping out. But also it's an economic reality for them. So instead of us talking about pop-up centers, new child care centers, we need to understand that there already are all these places that are ready and willing to go. And so as a city in San Antonio, we need to really start thinking about who amongst our quality child care providers should we allow to open, should we allow to take care of first responders' kids and other essential workers' children. This should be sort of a priority for us because the capacity is there. The know-how is absolutely there. We just need to make sure that it happens because the willingness is right there from our child care workers right now.
Mark Milton, Chief Operating Officer for Workforce Solutions Alamo. So y'all provide subsidized child care assistance to eligible families throughout the Alamo region. How are you seeing the system that you had being disrupted with the coronavirus?
Yes, good question. Our immediate focus right now is for those essential workers that you mentioned of our community who are still needed at their place of businesses and are working hard to support all of us during this crisis. And the good news is the state of Texas has released over $40 million statewide to support this group with the intent of having them move to the top of the list and be considered the priority. And I thought it was a great point made earlier that a lot of parents are home right now, and when they would typically have kids in those slots are becoming available. So we do have opportunities available, and we do see some flexibility with the state right now. So that's the encouraging signs that we're seeing at this point.
When we get through this, and we will get through this, these daycare centers that are typically running and are fully staffed and they had to close down because so many kids were pulled out, and Are they going to still, do you have slots that are saved? Do you think it's going to be difficult to restore what we had before? Because it was catch as catch can trying to find a place to keep your child looked after that you felt comfortable with.
You bet. You're absolutely correct. For parents who are home, their slots are actually being saved. So if they need to be at home with their kids right now, then when it's time to go back for everyone to go back to work, yes, those slots will be available for them. And we're continuously looking at those child care centers that we have and looking to improve the quality of those services. So from a safety standpoint, from an education standpoint, those are top of mind for us, for sure.
All right, I'm going to play one of our voicemails, and this is from Genesis.
Hello, my name is Genesis, and I'm currently helping a family that I've been working with for about almost 3 years. I am a nanny, and I've been going every morning from about 8 to come over and help them with online schooling, and then I leave around 3, and then I continue my education at home, too. So that's how I've been helping out, and maybe that's a possibility for other people who they can trust. They can get a nanny that can stay with them in the mornings to help out. Thank you.
All right. That's a good snapshot of how one person is dealing with this. And if you want to call in and tell us how you are providing care or someone is coming into your house and providing care for you, call in. Our number is 833-877-8255. It would be really great to get an assessment of how people are dealing with the situation right now. And so let me also go back to Diane Schilder about that. And so you heard from Genesis talking about she's a nanny, be able to provide care. Is that generally kind of like under the radar type of child care?
It does tend to be. So it depends on the state, but many states have regulated care that is offered through centers or through family child care. Separately, there is unregulated care. So the role of regulation, which I know many people think sounds like something that's a lot of red tape, is to ensure that there is compliance with health and safety. Often the programs that are regulated ensure that they follow procedures. So if a child happens to be sick or if a caregiver happens to be sick, they're told that they need to stay home in order to ensure that the diseases don't spread within the institution, either the center or the home. So this is an option, but it does tend to be under the table, and it tends to not be something that is reimbursable through subsidies across most states.
Bob Sanborn, the state has issued new ways of dealing with trying to prevent the spread of coronavirus in childcare. What are they telling people to do?
You know, I think what we're talking about in childcare is really the same idea of, you know, when kids are sick or when adults are sick, sort of stay away from each other, washing down everything, you know, washing your hands. It's the stuff that we're hearing on the news. I think what, you know, one of the great things about this is that we know that kids don't are not really at highest risk around the coronavirus, but there is spreading going on, and those adults have a risk of getting some of these things from these kids. So I think it's become a big worry, right, in terms of the spreading. But I think that if people take the right precautions, these child care workers can do an excellent job. These kids will certainly be safe, and parents will feel better about it when they're working with these centers that are doing the right things. And I can't talk enough about this idea that quality childcare centers have the best intentions and really want to do right for parents. And so when we invest in these high quality childcare centers, they're good during the coronavirus, and they're good outside of that. I mean, we need as a society, we need to start understanding here in the state of Texas that this is important. High quality childcare is very important.
We have an email from John. One of my friends owns a Spanish immersion school and daycare in San Antonio. I have seen her extreme level of stress over the last few weeks because of COVID-19. She has made the difficult decision to remain open so far. Will any government programs be made available to help her during this difficult time? How can we make sure that daycare workers protect themselves and their students? Mark Milton with Workforce Solutions Alamo. Will these schools be made whole?
Absolutely. We are working closely with the state to ensure that those child care centers will remain whole. One of the key elements that we wanted to stress is the parent share of cost. People may not be familiar with that. Essentially, parents do have to pay a small portion of their child care fees, even if they are being subsidized. Under the new state regulations, this is being waived. So for child care providers, yes, they will receive those full reimbursements, either from the state or from the local areas.
Diane Schilder, to that email from John, how can we make sure that daycare workers are able to protect themselves and students? Is word getting around? I mean, we could tell kids don't understand, safe distance. You know, they're not very good with boundaries to begin with.
Well, not only are young children not good with boundaries, but also as an individual caring for young children, it's important that we acknowledge that caregivers of infants have to change diapers, and they have to actually support children in terms of feeding them. In the caregivers who practice hygienic practices are at lower risk of spreading the disease. And again, these are standards that the National Association for the Education of Young Children has in place. Most of the licensed child care centers follow these practices, and so there is a lower likelihood that you would spread disease. In addition, there's information that is being distributed through a number of sources about ways that child care providers can use the child care subsidies to offset the cost of additional cleaning products and also to offset the cost that they might incur because they have a loss of private pay parents in their centers. So all of those things should reduce the stress and also ensure that, again, the environment is very healthy and safe.
So we have a lot of hourly workers who don't have glamorous jobs doing things that are very essential right now. We never thought of people who worked at our retail centers, grocery stores, as emergency workers before. But now, I mean, we really are seeing them as heroes. They're still showing up. They're getting the job done. It's stressful for them, too. Typically, these are low-wage earners, and many of them don't have a lot of resources to depend on, Diane. And maybe there is someone in their family who is able to stay home and take care of children. But they're not really trained. They don't really have a lot of resources. They don't, so how do we make sure they are getting this messaging?
That's a really terrific question. There are a lot of resources that are evidence-based that can be accessed not only through the internet, but through the public agencies in Texas and through the websites of your guests. The Urban Institute has a host of resources that are available that link to information from organizations ranging from the American Academy of Pediatrics to educational organizations. One important point is that caregivers of young children can access information online that can help them to understand appropriate child development. It's not a substitute for the type of caregiving that educated and trained workers have, but at least there are resources that can help them to address some of that stress that they might be experiencing in shifting gears and taking care of babies and preschoolers.
Yeah, and Bob Sanborn, what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we need to understand also is that as parents look for the best child care available, that the state offers sort of a star system, right? The Texas Rising Star system. And it's a great way for parents to understand the quality of what's happening. But we can't underestimate the quality also that's happening when there's not as much child care like we have right now. That's happening with parents, with grandparents, with aunts and uncles, with nice next-door neighbors, right? It's not always as high quality as you would want, but it's certainly very caring, and it's what's needed right now. And so using resources that are online, I think, is very important. You know, even in some of our poorest homes, we have access to a smartphone these days, and so accessing some of those things is really, really important.
Yeah, but not everyone has access to hand sanitizer and some of the essential items that it's hard to get hold of these days. We're going to take another break. You can call in with your questions and comments. We really want to hear what's happening in the community. 833-877-8255. That's 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
COVID-19 doesn't discriminate. Its reach extends from seniors in nursing homes to the Prince of Wales to the homeless.
So is the certainty that the virus is coming for the homeless? Homeless people in six states have already tested positive.
Washington Post reporter Hannah Dreyer spent time with one of the most vulnerable populations to infection. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about coronavirus pandemic and child care. Many people are able to be home right now. They're told to be home because of the shelter in place and a lot of businesses are shut down. But there are many essential workers who have to go to the hospital. They have to go to their jobs at the police station. They got to go to the grocery store and they got to stock shelves and help you check out. What are they going to do with their children when the daycare centers are closed or Head Start or pre-K for SA? It's putting them in a bind. Are we able to help these individuals? Are we told to just go figure it out on your own? Are we coming together as a society and providing safe options for them and their children? You can call in. The number is 833-TPR-TALK or 833-877-8255. Diane Schulder, senior fellow at the Urban Institute, as you study these programs and policies that affect children and families, I have seen some news reports of faith-based institutions putting together child care centers specifically for these essential workers at this time. Is that a solution?
That is a really innovative solution that is being deployed in many states. The state of Indiana, for example, has a license for faith-based providers. The providers must abide by health and safety procedures in order to ensure that the children they're caring for are, again, cared for in an environment that will be supportive. In addition, many other states are really thinking in an innovative way about how they can offer some flexibility in regulation. So, for example, Wisconsin has language in their emergency regulations that allows for new providers to come into the system, but they need to be working with a licensed provider. So it can be a solution. One of the key issues is to ensure that if this does happen, it's done so in a way that abides by standards to ensure, again, the health and safety not only of the children, but as you mentioned earlier, I thought it was a very important point, children do not appear to be as affected by this disease as older individuals, but if the individuals who are caring for children who happen to be spreading the disease have some underlying risk conditions, that can be a real challenge for the community and it could cause community spread. So by following health and safety standards, you're much less likely to have that happen.
I'm going to go to the phone lines. Number is 833-877-8255. That's 833-TPR-TALK. And Dr. Pat, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm a developmental pediatrician, and I take care of a lot of families with children with autism and ADHD, and this week we've been doing most of our visits via telemedicine, and I thought I'd give you some information about how a lot of these families are coping at home.
Yeah, I'm glad you called, so go right ahead.
Yeah, so a lot of families are doing really, really well. The kids have, you know, not had school for about 3 weeks, so they're craving structure, and the parents are handling getting the work from school, and the kids are getting it done, and it's really pretty amazing. Some families, though, are really, really struggling. They have kids with, you know, big behaviors, and sometimes the families themselves, the adults, have their own issues. And so families that have been doing well are doing even better. Some of the families that weren't doing well before are doing well now, but some of them are really, really falling apart, and there's really no safety network for them other than trying to work with medication and meditation and you know, but it's really, really tough, and especially since they can't leave the house.
So you mentioned children who have these special needs, but there's also adults with autism, low functioning autism, and they require a lot of care, and that's also something that needs to be thought about. Pat?
Very little support for adults with disabilities. So it's very, very hard to find support for the adults.
Yeah, so that's something else to think about as well. Pat, thank you so much for calling in. So Bob Sanborn, President, CEO, Children at Risk, what's your reaction to Pat's observations?
No, I think you're finding a whole range of reactions at homes, right? And I think there's also a lot of stress, right? And so especially for the adults, there's stress. And at first, kids were thinking this is a snow day. But indeed, what it is that this is not a play date. You don't get a chance to mingle with your friends. And so there's a lot of stress with kids at home as well. So there's all this stress going on. And this is where professionals, right? So when there are high-quality daycare workers, high-quality child care providers that can work with the kids, and when adults do have to work and they have a place to put their kids, it sort of relieves a lot of that stress. But, you know, as a society, as this continues, we're going to need to deal with what's going on in terms of the stress and understand that people are going to start to need breaks, and we'll start to see, if we haven't already, an increase in some of the child abuse because of the stress. But this is gets back to this point of when there's high quality child care, the one that currently exists, and you mentioned, Dave, this whole idea of churches that might pop up. I go back to the idea that we really need to focus on those places that have already been providing child care. They're raising their hand. They're saying, use us. We don't need these pop-up places. Maybe in some towns there's a need for them. But in San Antonio and across the state of Texas, we've seen early education providers all say, hey, let us help because we want to be there. There is capacity. We're ready to go.
All right, let me go to that point. Let's go to Catherine on the phones. And Catherine, welcome to The Source. Catherine, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi. Yes, Catherine with United Way here in San Antonio, Bexar County. Just playing off of what Bob said, want to tag on to that. We know that a lot of healthcare workers and first responders, people that are in those businesses and in those jobs that are required to go to work, are really, really faced with that childcare challenge, as you all have talked about. We are really excited because United Way of San Antonio, San Antonio Area Foundation, and City of San Antonio have joined together to provide a child care relief fund for those who are still having to go to work and needing assistance. We're paying for child care right now during this time. So they can access that fund. They can call 211 or they can go to UnitedWaySATX.org and fill out that application. So 211 from their phone or UnitedWaySATX.org. But to Bob's point, we do have a lot of partners in our community. The YWCA and the YMCA have really been coming together to look at how can we expand the capacity that we have within the centers that we already have in our community. How can we make slots more available for these families? And so those two really, really amazing partners have really stepped up and are looking how they can expand their capacity.
So, Catherine, the fund is targeting resources for who? Who qualifies?
Those are for parents with children 6 weeks up to the age of 12. So they can figure out, they can actually access all of those details on United Way's website, or they can call 211 to ask those questions and see if that's something that they qualify for.
So is this for like essential workers, people who have to work right now?
Yes, these are for parents that have to be at work right now and do not have the means to cover childcare because perhaps there are more children in the home than what they originally were covering childcare for. Those children whose schools are closed or whatever the circumstance may be, maybe their childcare center is closed and they're trying to have everybody go to one. So we're helping them access those resources as to the childcare centers, our partners that are available, as well as the Emergency Relief Fund to help them cover that child care.
What's the turnaround on once I apply, how long before I could get some help?
I believe all of that is on our website. I don't want to misquote you over the phone, but I know if they go to our website or call 211, they can make sure that they qualify for the relief, as well as find out more information about what that turnaround time is.
But things are expedited right now, I'm sure, right?
Exactly. And I would imagine it's based on the number of requests that we have that they would be able to give them that information.
Thank you so much, Kathy, from United Way. Catherine, for that information. Mark Milton at Workforce Solutions Alamo, y'all typically, like even when before this coronavirus popped up, y'all provided subsidized child care assistance for eligible families throughout the Alamo region. And that continues now.
Absolutely. That continues now. Again, we are prioritizing those essential workers at this time.
So we are encouraging parents that if you do have children and you're not working, to keep your kids at home with you so that we can open up more slots for those essential workers. But anyone who needs access to those services, they can contact Workforce Solutions Alamo at workforcesolutionsalamo.org or call us at 210-230-6300, and we will be happy to help those individuals as they call.
And is there some sort of, I don't know, like a aggregation of child care facilities that are available for, because everyone is spread out. It's hard to say this is a good place, that's a good place. You have to figure out what works in your life. But do you have like a list of available child care facilities that will qualify according to Workforce Solutions?
We do, and we will triage that list with the individuals as they call in to make it as friendly for that individual and their specific situation as possible. Bob mentioned earlier the Texas Rising Star certification, which we do stress. That's the premium child care providers that we have. They have to go through a little bit more of a lengthy eligibility process to attain that recognition. But we encourage parents to consider Texas Rising Star certification when they pick a child care provider, and we can definitely assist with that process.
And how much subsidize? How much money do you got there? I mean, how much can you really help a family?
So as we mentioned earlier, the state of Texas released $40 million. Now, that's statewide. We won't find out exactly how much will come to the San Antonio region for another day or two. But the services are there, and we really don't stress. We don't want the parents to stress about the amount. We will work with each parent as they come in and provide those services as necessary.
All right. That is on your website, and the website again is?
WorkforceSolutionsAlamo.org.
And even after this is something that you provide all the time, so that families can look for this. All right, we're taking another break. We're talking about coronavirus and child care. Did get an interesting comment on Facebook, and we're going to get the answer when we come back. The question is, I'm confused. If we're putting all these kids in daycare, why are we not starting school again? You know, there's sort of a confusion there. So when we come back, I'll try and get an answer for people who can understand, you know, what is happening in this regard. And you can also ask your own question on Facebook, or you can call us up at 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about coronavirus and child care right now. Interesting question. I'm confused. If we're putting all the kids in daycare, why can't we start school again? That's from our Facebook page, and it's from Suzanne. Diane Schiller, that does seem kind of like a chin stroker there. Help us understand the answer to that.
Absolutely. So what we've seen in many states, including Massachusetts, for example, the schools were closed before there were statewide orders to close childcare and early education facilities. So in Texas, we have seen a closure in schools, and the decision of whether or not to close a childcare or early education program is left to the local region and or to the provider themselves. One of the reasons is that in some instances, individuals see childcare as an essential part of the workforce. That is, again, if we want to make sure that the frontline healthcare workers, paramedics, et cetera, are able to go to work. Often if they have young children, they're not able to do so if they don't have quality care and education. However, one of the trends that I've been noticing across the country is that a week or two after the schools are closed, many states, especially the states that have emergency orders, are closing the vast majority of child care programs and allowing only those that are providing emergency services to continue to operate.
Let's go back to the phone lines with Angelica. And Angelica, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
So I had a question. My daughter is in Montessori school. It closed down because they follow the same regulations as NEISD. So they're still asking for us to pay for the child care, even though they're not open. And I'm an essential worker, so I have to go to work.
And so it's the full tuition they want you to pony up?
So it's $217 a week.
And if you don't, then what are they telling you?
They haven't said anything yet. I mean, I've been paying. They opened up one day this week, but.
All right. Well, I don't. We can't tell you specifically what to do with your own case. But that's a tough pickle, and I'm sorry to hear that that's happening. Bob Sanborn, and then I'll go to Mark Milton. Bob Sanborn, what's your reaction to that?
Well, I think the first reaction is that it doesn't really seem very fair, does it? And I think that she should not be paying. If she's not getting the service, she should not be paying. What it is, of course, every place, every child care center is feeling this financial strain. They still have to pay rent. They still have bills to pay. So they're saying, well, let's make everyone pay and hold their seat, when indeed everyone is having these same problems. So I think that what Angelica has to do is go back and say, listen, I can't afford to do this, just like everyone else, and maybe get other parents to be around there to say the same thing. We understand the financial constraints on some of these centers, and this is why the state is trying to help and the federal government's trying to help to make sure this all happens. But we're going to run into a lot of these things because everyone is facing this significant financial strain.
And Mark Milton, if Angelica tells them, why don't y'all call Workforce Solutions Alamo and they can help you find the stopgap funds so that you can still, you know, keep the lights on. But I mean, I can't, this is not right. Is that something she could look at?
Sure. It would be possible. We wouldn't obviously guarantee anything on a specific situation like that. But again, I think it's just about everyone demonstrating compassion during these times. This is an unprecedented event for our nation, our world, and I think we all need to be understanding of that. So we wouldn't speak on the specifics of her situation, but we are looking for our child care providers to have them made whole if they are experiencing loss in financial areas such as the one that was mentioned.
I want to scroll back to the question that we had at the beginning of the segment about why daycare centers are open. Some are open, but some schools are shut down. And so Bob Sanborn, to kind of help us understand that with a little more clarity, you know, we had the order was to close schools because those were super spreaders. But we realized that there were many people that needed to have child care. And you couldn't have a complete and total prohibition on child care. So what we're trying to do is figure out a way to have this system for the people who really, really need it and do it in a way that will manage the risk, minimize the risk of children being infected and still getting quality care. Is that it?
Yeah, we really are talking about a small subset, right? As opposed to opening up all schools, what we've seen some ISDs around the state do is open up one school, say for first responders, right? So that it's for older kids and there are special needs, right? When you're talking about babies and toddlers and kids that are 3 years old, as opposed to kids that are grades 1 through 12, right? And so, you know, if you're middle school and beyond, you're fine at home, possibly alone, you know, unless you're a teenager who likes to get into trouble. But by and large, we've seen some places that open up these schools, one school in each district, so that you can have a place for first responders. And there's hazard pay that's going, right? For child care workers, for teachers that are doing these things, we need to understand that it is a little bit above and beyond. And so maybe consider doing hazard pay, which is combat pay, if you will. We're seeing a lot of states discuss that as well. But the idea is, how do we make sure that all of our essential workers, our first responders, have that the sanity of knowing that their kids are doing fine and that we're taking good care of them? And this coronavirus crisis really brings that to light, right? That we're not doing right by every kid, even though we're expecting the most out of their parents.
Diane Schilder, you have put together some resources online, policy practices, resources for child care and early education providers amid the coronavirus crisis. What are the top items that you want people to be thinking about?
There are a number of really important issues in this brief that I wanted to mention. The hyperlinks that are included in this brief are being updated, so the curated resources available to parents, to programs and to policymakers are being updated on a regular basis. So I would urge folks to take a look at urban.org. The bottom line that I, and one of the most surprising things I found from pulling together this information is something that Bob just mentioned. I'd like to build on the point that child care providers are increasingly being viewed as essential workers, but they're currently making nearly poverty wages. In Texas, for example, half of the frontline child care workforce are eligible for public benefits, Medicare, food stamps, Medicaid, food stamps, TANF, for example, and this is the case even though the cost of child care in Texas is more than the cost of a year of public education. As the previous caller was asking about paying, even though her child is not attending care, one of the reasons I'm seeing this happening is because child care providers are in a very precarious situation financially. So the degree to which the state and the terrific other guests on the program can support the workforce so that it is there after this virus passes will ensure that parents have the quality care that they need to really support their workforce participation.
But you do focus a lot on prevention in this documentation. You want people to be able to use child care, but also take the necessary steps to prevent the spread of the virus in our communities, which is the critical issue.
It is, and I must admit, and I've mentioned to colleagues, I wrote this piece 2 weeks ago, and the landscape has changed dramatically. So 2 weeks ago, there were very few places around the country that had closed child care and early education centers. So the immediate practical steps that could be taken around prevention have to do with the CDC guidance around hand washing, use of sanitizer, ensuring that adults of young children help the young children to wash their hands, and also to engage in the practices that I mentioned around making sure that sick adults and children stay at home. With that said, one of the things that I'm seeing now is that increasingly these centers are being closed, and so in order to ensure prevention, it's important that, again, we work with the existing workforce to make sure that they're practicing hygienic practices, accessing some of the funding that is available to offset the cost of cleaning, and also seek opportunities for small business grants and loans, as well as other opportunities that might be coming as a result of the legislation that's currently pending in Congress to offset the issues they're facing as they close in order to, again, ameliorate the problems because they close in order to stop the spread of the virus.
Right, but the ones that are open, they're having as hard a time as anyone else gaining the personal protective equipment that we would want them to have. We want them to have hand sanitizers. We want them to have maybe even the mask or whatever you could use. And it seems like we should have a more sophisticated system to get those items to the areas that really need them the most. And that doesn't seem to exist right now. And we're running out of time. But Diane, what do you think about that?
I am not a medical professional, but I do.
This is a logistics situation.
It's a logistics situation. I have heard from the CDC that regular cleaning with soap is a very effective way of ensuring that the surfaces are not covered in germs. And I also have heard from healthcare professionals who I know regularly changing clothing and really practicing hand washing and hygienic practices is one way to prevent the spread of infection.
Diane Schilder is the senior fellow at the Urban Institute studying programs and policies that affect children and families. Also with us, Bob Sanborn, president and CEO of Children at Risk, and Mark Milton, chief operating officer for Workforce Solutions Alamo, which provides subsidized child care assistance to eligible families throughout the Alamo region. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.